Welcome to Presidential Pardon, the only podcast willing to seduce you, cut out our heart, and put it in your fucking hands. I'm Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
Tonight we're covering Season 2, Episode 13, Chapter 26 of House of Cards. This was a great finale for me. I really thought this was the most impressive episode of the season, as a finale should be. The only thing I didn't like about it, no Freddy.
No Freddy.
Freddy never made an appearance again after blowing up his barbecue joint.
Yeah, that's too bad. What do you think his future is?
I'm really hoping he gets appointed as the White House chef now that Frank is president. I really hope so.
Just ribs are the only thing on the menu.
Yeah, I mean, but they still bring out the menu for everyone right. who comes to the White House, but all it just says is ribs.
What's for breakfast this morning, Freddie? Ribs, Frank. It's like 11 o'clock. I need a late night snack. Well, I can make you a half rack of ribs, Frank. How about them ribs?
Yep.
For dinner, slow bled ribs.
Oh, my favorite.
Francis will ran through a law through Congress and sign it that makes slow bleeding pigs legal. It's actually illegal to non slow bleed pigs.
All right. So Frank is president. Wow, that's huge. He goes from nobody, from the majority whip. I mean, it's not nobody into the White House as vice president last season, and now president. This season.
I do want to take a slight exception. I don't think this is the best episode of the season.
No?
I think the episode 4 was better, where Claire went on national TV and handled that reporter with the sexual assault charges and her allegations of abortions and infidelity, all that crap.
That was a very good one.
I liked episode 9, which is where Frank or Freddie did blow up his rib shack.
Uh-huh.
But honestly, last year, where the show peaked at the death of Russo,
yeah.
And then kind of felt like all the other episodes were a denouement towards the finale.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like this show pretty much had its pedal to the metal, with rare exception. I can only think of one or two episodes which were kind of a catch your breath type.
Sure.
In fact, I think this season overall is more of what we liked about season one and less of what we didn't like. Think about it.
Yeah,
there was embarrassing press conference. You know, there was no
I didn't mind that stuff. I thought it was interesting to watch. There was never a plot line in the first season that I didn't have fun watching. With this one, I really just hated Lucas's line.
Well, you do. I guess there wasn't a single plot line that was as stupid as the Lucas thing. Or not as stupid, but just...
It's unenjoyable to watch.
Do you think it's worth it to where we got to the end with Gavin? Because I actually think Gavin moving forward is interesting.
All right, why don't we talk about Gavin and Stamper first?
Okay.
Because the lid is just blown wide off of this at the end with Stamper's death, because Gavin is essentially trying to blackmail Stamper into protecting him from the FBI. And now that Stamper's not around, he can't do that. So where does that leave Gavin?
Well, yeah, with Stamper, I thought that he was going to bring in Gavin as kind of like their cyber... I mean, can you imagine having Gavin on the White House's side?
Yeah.
Now, the thing about Gavin is he is just shy of an anarchist.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how much of the establishment he would go along with or how reliable he'd be.
He actually says to the FBI agent... I have been actively working against the FBI for years.
Right. But I don't know, does he consider himself a patriot?
I think so.
Is there something that Frank could use to, make him think that his skills are being appreciated and used in a way that, can Frank pull the wool over on him or send him on some mission that he would agree with to keep him happy for at least a season?
If he did try that, it would have to be something where Gavin feels that he's not being pressured into it, because he does not want to be under anyone's thumb.
Right.
That's his main thing this episode. I want to get out from under the FBI.
But let me ask you this. One of the core things that started off this whole trade war with China was cyber warfare. the China and Chinese officially engaging as a national entity with cyber warfare of the United States, and the fact that we're kind of behind the times on that and vulnerable to it. What if Gavin is our soldier in that war against China?
God, that'd be cool. That'd be real cool. Because A, I like the actor a lot. And B, I think that
he's not barking like a dog.
Yeah, sure. Sure. When he doesn't have
that dude is
nose chin in his apartment telling him what to do. Ugh.
Rubber face.
But I think that's perfect. Like you said, we started off the season with that. It's got to be a continuing threat, and he's the perfect guy to try to deal with it.
We debated at, you know, when Rachel clubbed Stamper with the brick or rock or whatever, whether he was dead or not, but they made pretty clear Stamper's dead.
Yeah, yeah,
unless
I think so.
He just sleeps gently in broad daylight, face down in the leaves with his eyes open.
And pale-faced with no color in his skin, just like...
Now that's Stamper. This is the first time we've seen him in natural light.
Okay.
He's not being lit by a cell phone or fluorescent light or...
A dome light in his car.
Yeah.
The other thing that this brings in, Rachel kills him, obviously, and Rachel's runs off.
Rachel probably has to die early on in next season, right?
Well, she's definitely a wild card. I mean, where does she go from here? Does she go track down a reporter who can kind of help her get her story out and maybe immunize her from the death of Stamper?
Man, I don't know. And the other thing is who kills her, because Frank shed all the blood so far, and he can no longer do that.
Oh, no. No, he can't. As soon as he became vice president and he had Secret Service with him everywhere, he was done with that. I don't know. I don't know where she goes, and I don't know how that plays out, but I think that's going to be an immediate threat he has to deal with next season.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I remember asking at the end of our marathon of season one is, like, you know, how can they continue to raise the stakes and yet still maintain this as believable?
Uh-huh.
I thought they did a really good job of continually raising the stakes, and I believed most of what went on.
Sure.
Nothing really it struck me as implausible, except for some of the things, like, you know, we kind of bitch about American politics in particular, but again, that's not implausible so much as I just didn't like it.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think they can maintain that tightrope balance in season three?
I hope they will, yeah.
As Frank as a president?
Yeah, it's got to be more and more difficult for him to do the type of things he's been doing. And, I mean, he's gaining more political power, but he's also gaining less freedom of movement.
So it seems like he is fixed. He's going about because he's caused most of the problems and crisis the country is facing, and he's able to quickly end a lot of these. So
yeah, smart.
I see a season three opening with, you know, Tusk is now beholden to him.
I think Tusk might be out the door because he ultimately betrayed him in the end, right?
No, he ultimately did what Frank wanted to
when
he forced Remy's hand.
Yeah, because he wanted to get the president impeached, and then and Tusk was one of the few to do that.
And so I think he'll take care of Tusk, and they won't be partners, but Tusk will be a powerful pawn for him.
He'll still have the president's ear in a certain way.
He's got Jackie,
mm-hmm.
Kinda, although she's a little bit of a wild card. He's got the House leadership. He's got the Senate leadership.
Yep.
He's going to have that Michael Kern.
Yep.
He's got the Secretary of State. I mean, he's got a lot of powerful pieces put in place, so he could probably do a lot of quote-unquote good things and get a lot of good press, and then these scandals he caused to get here is what's going to be probably what brings him down.
Sure. What do you think about him, his promise to Kern to make him the Secretary of the Treasury? You think he's going to follow through with that?
Yes. He'd be an idiot not to.
Yeah, I think he has to. He's gotten what he wants. Why wouldn't he throw a bone? You know?
Plus, I love that. I actually like the actor from his William Boone days of Earth Final Conflict.
A terrible show.
No, first, I will fight anyone that says the first season of Earth Final Conflict wasn't good. Right. It went off the fucking rails after that. But
kind of like this podcast is.
Kevin Kilner, that's his name.
So I want to talk a little bit about how Frank got into the position of president, because it was absolutely masterful. The way that he, you know, he uses this confession that he writes to the president in this letter to get the president back on his side while simultaneously working directly against him.
And it was his, I'm pushing all my chips in the middle table, or yes. in the middle of the table, because that the president had everything gamble. He needed to send him to jail.
Yes.
And probably in most of his involvement with the scandal as well.
Yeah, I think so.
So he...
And he chose to once again trust, even though Frank tells him on the phone, look, I am a liar. I swindle people. I cheat people. I manipulate.
Because, but that's,
but not you.
Yeah,
but not
that's,
you.
That's what I like to portray because it gets me what I want and this blah, blah, blah. But yeah.
Yeah. And then he goes along with it. And he does it again, exactly the way he did before.
Yeah, that initially rubbed me the wrong way. But then as I was watching it unfold, I realized that, again, the president only sees the letter, which is
yeah.
him putting his political life in his hands.
Mm-hmm.
And for what I don't understand is why did the president rescind the offer to Tusk before his testimony? I wish I could watch it again. It'll be interesting to because that's the one linchpin. Yeah. That's what caused everything to go bad.
Yeah, that's what caused Tusk to testify.
Yeah. Well, that and the fact that, you know, because he was going to stick with the plead the fifth strategy.
Yeah.
Remy signaling, which seemed like it was just a maneuver, Remy signaling that he's going to meet and sing on him was yep. what pushed him into Frank's camp.
Yeah, it was totally, it was a combination of those two, right? Like, I no longer have a deal, and the president kind of stabbed me in the back here.
But for the president, Remy. That seemed just like Tusk stabbed him in the back.
Sure.
The president didn't know that Frank had that Frank knew about the pardon.
Uh-huh.
So that was the other key thing that I think that somehow that all fits in. But I just don't understand why the president would withdraw the pardon deal from Tusk right before the testimony. Because if he wanted to do that, he could always do it later.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't like there was anything in writing.
Sure. The other thing I noticed with... Frank manipulating the president here is while he's doing it, he's working on his models. And it finally struck me why Frank does this, because Frank likes to meticulously move these pieces into place and set things up the way he wants them. This is an extension of what he does at the White House. This is just him putting pieces of a puzzle together in a specific fashion, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it does relax him, but it's also an extension of what kind of person he is and what he does every day.
It's an affectation the writers chose to give him because yeah. it fits in with the theme. It's a little.
I like it. I think it works.
Do you? Okay. Yeah. I thought it was a little on the nose for me.
Sure. And they play it a lot.
They do.
They play that card all the time.
And that's one of the weaknesses I'm noticing in the writers is once a player or an actor or a character leads off with a allegory. Every fucking piece of dialogue out of everyone's mouth within a 30-yard radius has to follow that till the bitter end.
Should I start barking?
Well, that's the best. Like, Remy and Tusk did it, too.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, you know, I can't even remember what it was, but it's something about, you know, if you throw a grenade, then I'll jump behind a bunker. Well, if the bunker explodes, then I'll be there with the fire extinguisher. Well, if you have the fire extinguisher, don't expect me to have the bucket of sand. You know, it's like... God damn, real people don't talk that way, and I don't even know that it's cool. Sometimes yeah. it's cool, but a lot of times it just comes off as silly.
Sure, absolutely. We don't talk a ton in these instant casts about like shots and lighting and stuff like that, but there was one shot that really struck me, and it was the underground shot with the meeting between Frank and Tusk, where Frank walks down this long hall in the dark and stops facing the opposite
direction.
You're
talking about
at
the opera?
Yes.
Where he explained to him about the legend of Dark Plagueis? Darth Plagueis?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, he's totally trying to convert him to the dark side there. But no, they both stop. Frank stops. They're both facing different directions there while they're talking. I just thought it was a brilliantly set up shot. And with the lighting, with the darkened hallway in the front, the lit hallway in the back, it was very cool.
While we're praising the shot and cinematography, I got to call attention to something that they haven't done a lot this season,
mm-hmm.
But they did really to good effect, is the opening is a bunch of different, it's like CNN or C-SPAN footage and like 60 Minutes footage. And the way they shoot it is to look exactly like those shows look.
Sure.
And
that interview looked really good.
I think that's really freaking cool.
Absolutely. Definitely. Going back to Tusk a little bit, when he turns on the president, during his testimony. I think that is the perfect thing for Tusk to do at that moment, because especially after, you know, Underground and the Opera, the talk that he has with Frank, Frank pleads with him to be a businessman. Think like a businessman. You have built your fortune minimizing risk.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be a betrayal of his character, I think, not to connect the dots and make the decision there that it is nothing. Like, doing what I'm doing is not going to get me anywhere. If I roll over on him, I'm actually going to... he maintains that what he's doing is legal. So I think in his mind, he thinks this is the best option.
Mm-hmm.
And it has the lowest risk. So I thought that was good. Were you going to say something?
Yeah, Frank's story about his dad's bullshit, right? Because
dad with the shotgun.
One thing about his father is I don't understand. I take the stuff he says directly at us in the camera to be the truth.
Uh-huh.
But how much of that do you think is fiction? Was his father a violent man? Was his father a drinker? Was his father suicidal?
I tend to believe that. I don't know why. It's maybe something about how he said to Tusk when he was in his house that his father was not really a great man.
The thing is,
but he gave good advice.
When he was writing that letter, it seemed like he was actually writing. Like, there was like this brief delay where Kevin Spacey kind of looked up and, oh, I know. And he just started launching that suicide story. It's like, that didn't seem like something that he was bringing out of his recollection. It felt to me like it's something that he invented out of whole cloth. But
you could be right.
You can't really tell. And I don't know that it matters so much, except for I try to find things that tell us stuff about his relationship.
Yeah, it would definitely
his personality.
It would add a wrinkle to the interchange between him and the president there.
On a more human note, mm-hmm. I really liked the way they handled the resolution of the Megan plotline, which was their poster child for the sexual assault prevention bill.
Mm-hmm.
And we find out she went and literally jumped in a lake.
Yep.
She's on a heavy dose of lithium. She seemed really checked out. And this is a kind of the flip side of what I said about idealists on the last podcast, that, you know, that they don't understand how the real world works, but they also pay a very high toll to be trying to push society in this, because she was talking about how people on online and letters and screaming at her in real life are calling her a whore, a slut, liar, bitch. I don't know that anyone has a thick enough skin to endure that for long.
Yeah, certainly not an extended period of time.
We're just not, as humans, designed to sustain that much withering social pressure. And it clearly has wrecked her as a human being.
Sure, and it wrecks Claire as well, seeing what Claire has done to this woman.
Not only that, but then when Trisha calls and thanks her and tells her what a good person it is, she's fundamentally different than Frank. I don't think she's not quite as calculating, or at least
she actually gives a shit. We talked about this in the last episode. She cares about things.
She cares about, she still does it.
Uh-huh.
But it does cost her in a way that I don't think it does Frank.
Yeah. I think you're right about that. So Frank is now president. Is there any chance that he is still connected to all this and gets impeached himself?
Certainly. I think that, to me, this feels like next season is going to be the last, and it's got to end with his death or dishonor or something. I mean, would it feel like House of Cards if he went down as the greatest president in history?
I don't know.
Feel like House of Cards.
Yeah, I think it might. If he can just totally shirk reality and make people bend to what he wants them to think, that might be the fitting in for this.
It'd kind of be like the anti Breaking Bad.
Yeah,
that was all about karma and how, regardless of your intentions and regardless of what you wanted to happen, you still pay a price for your sins.
Mm-hmm.
It would be interesting if it turned around and be like, nope, the bad people actually win, and sometimes they're the best. You know, they're the best leaders. That's kind of a Game of Thronian point.
Okay.
That's like, you know, some people like, oh, well, you know, if only Ned was king, Ned would be a terrible king.
Yeah, I think that would be kind of a fitting in for the series. And I would not mind if it ended that way. I think a lot of people might be pissed. People tend to like happy endings for good people. and that would certainly not be one.
Yeah, if this was just unapologetic, there's no no Act 3 Scarface or Goodfellas where there's some punishment or something. It's just, yep, the bad guys win. And not only that, but they were better at their jobs than the good guys.
Yeah.
You would prefer to have Frank Underwood as a president than you would like a Donald Blythe.
Uh-huh. Ah, rough justice, but I don't know. That might be cool.
Speaking of Donald Blythe, I think that's very interesting.
What about him?
We see him grow. He went through a lot of growth as a character from the stereotypical far-left liberal that is, you know, politically impotent to a guy who, while still, I think he sees a lot of kinship in Jackie. Do you think an interesting plotline for season 3 might be a war for Jackie's soul with Donald Blythe on one end and Frank on the other?
It could be, yeah. And Remy thrown in the mix would be even more interesting, right?
Yeah, what is a position in the White House commiserate with his experience and loyalty?
I said garbage man.
That could be all the way from garbage man to chief of staff.
Uh-huh.
What do you think of chief of staff?
Wow.
Doug Stamper's dead.
Yeah, he's not doing anything next season.
Could it be Seth? I mean, it's got to be Seth or Remy, right, for chief of staff?
I don't think Frank would give... I do not think Frank would give Remy chief of staff after the ordeals that he's been through this season with Remy. He doesn't even know what side this guy's playing for it anymore, right?
Well, but that's his protege.
Yeah, that's true. I feel like Seth has a better shot.
He's a fantastic character, a great actor.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's got to be in a position where he actually has something to do. And it seems like his career as a lobbyist is over. And it seems like he's also finally learned a lesson about money and power, although I liked his take on it. Like, power is the best, but as long as it lasts, and it never does.
Sure, yeah.
So that was kind of...
Is that a warning test for next season, what's going to happen to Frank?
Certainly.
Okay.
Certainly.
Well, before we tap our rings on the desk here, is there anything else you want to talk about?
That was a perfect end scene, by the way.
Just okay, yeah.
A gorgeous office porn shot of the Oval Office with just beautiful lighting, and then him wrapping that ring on the desk. It's pretty fucking awesome.
Oh, man, and I'm a sucker for solid wooden desks with leather tops. I can't get enough.
Indeed.
That's going to be the bald move desk at some point.
Going to get a replica of the Resolute desk made for our offices.
Sure. Let's do it.
That won't cost too much money. what do you think about... Let's talk about... This is the first time we've done anything like this. It's marathon.
Yeah.
And we've done two. So how do you think it went? What did you like about this process?
I liked that we were able to get content out to people who were craving it before they could realistically expect it.
Yeah.
I think there's...
We definitely have...
People
the first,
want that, right?
We have the first flag planted on the moon for sure.
Okay.
If you want a podcast for Game of Thrones season 2, we have the market. We own all the corners for now. It probably won't last for another even week. But for now, we got it, and that did feel good, and I felt good to have all the listener support too. I mean, we had a lot
of
praise on Facebook and private messages and Twitter and emails, and so I feel like that was good.
The other thing that I really liked about it is watching these episodes back to back does not leave me a week between them to forget what happened the previous week.
Yeah.
So it's very easy to catch things that have happened in the past and are now feeding into the latest episodes.
Yep.
I feel like that's a big advantage of doing it this way.
I think it's slightly the format we've adopted in these particular instant casts, where we don't do scene by scene, but we do more like a threaded analysis.
Yeah.
Where we go through each particular thread. I found myself liking that a lot. It was more interesting for me to do. It really consolidated and sharpened up the notes.
And you never heard us say, "Oh, well, let's wait to talk about that until."
I wonder what I would love to hear people's feedback on what they think of that, you know, going forward. As like, do they really like the scene by scene? the weakness of it is I don't feel like there's as many much rooms to make jokes, because a lot of the scene by scene stuff is I actually put my jokes in there or the things I thought were funny.
Yeah.
And when we're just talking themes, you don't think about the little like side jokes and stuff like that. So I feel like the casts weren't as funny, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. I think that might be a downside. Not quite as entertaining, more analytical, I guess.
Yeah.
What didn't you like about this process?
It was way more exhausting than I thought.
I think I hit my limit right around 4 episodes per day. Like an 8-hour stint of just solid podcasting and watching.
Part of that was we fucked up. We actually had a schedule where we thought we were going to get up at a certain time, a certain date, and we've been working our way towards that.
Uh-huh.
And somehow, and I don't still understand how we didn't catch this. None of the thousands of people listening to us caught this. Nobody in our friends and family circle. We've been saying the whole time it comes out on Valentine's Day, the 14th. We've also been saying Saturday at 3 a.m. That was wrong. It came out Friday at 3 a.m., which left us scrambling. You had to drive. Yeah. I mean,
I woke up at 4 a.m. preparing to wake up at 3 a.m. the next night, and I looked online, and I was like, oh, my God, House of Cards is out already. So I called you up, and I was like, we need to get this done, and I packed my shit, and I drove over here.
And thank God, because we had a bad storm coming in, you had already planned to leave early, so it wasn't. We weren't, I mean, that caught off guard, because had it not, you wouldn't have planned on being here till 7 p.m. and we would have lost a full day. So we had to probably podcast later with the same sleep deprivation.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it's been more exhausting than I thought.
Yeah. I mean, really the judge of, I think, whether or not we want to do this again is whether you guys respond to it.
I was slightly worried that I wonder about that episode 211, the one we recorded kind of against their better judgment last night.
Yeah, that's probably a mistake. But
yeah, I wonder if people, if there's a noticeable slip in our quality on that one.
Sure.
But yeah, that's the thing. If we do this again versus, I mean, we're certainly always going to cover House of Cards.
Yeah.
But the marathon style, It's whether that pays off as far as people downloading and appreciating it and all that. And that's just, you know, it's going to take probably 2 months to be able to judge that because of the way we have no idea how many people watch Netflix. Mm-hmm. We have no idea how many of our regular listenership watches House of Cards, and the usage patterns all over the map. I mean, there's crazy people like us that watched it the first weekend. Some people watched it the first day. there's people that watch it once a week. There's people to watch it and burst here and there. It's a big experiment for us, and that's definitely one of the hard things, the negatives. What about you?
As far as
the marathon stuff,
what I didn't like about it?
Yeah.
I felt like my limit was somewhere around 4 podcasts, and when we tried to push past that as we needed to do to get all the content out there, it was. I feel like my quality really suffered for it.
I wish this was a 10-episode season, because we could do two, 3 days and one 4 day without breaking a sweat.
Sure.
But 5 and 6 podcasts is tough. I thought, and it's funny because I had originally envisioned this as us just doing the 13 episodes in one shot.
Yeah, it's not going
to
happen.
Yeah, we found out that when we tried to do, which I'm glad we did season one as a test run.
Yeah,
there's just no way.
It takes about 2 hours to do one, so we're looking at 26 hours straight.
Yeah, our podcasts like 8, 9 through 13 would just be like us making random gibberish animal noises.
Yeah, pretty much.
And falling asleep on the mic.
I would look like Stamper at the end of it. And not even the dead Stamper, the alive Stamper who's aged 15 years over the end of the season.
Indeed.
So, I don't know. I would like to do this again if you guys think it's worth our time, for sure.
Anything else we want to talk about?
Nope, I'm good.
All right, cool. Well, thanks for coming on the trip with us. And as we say, we will be starting, I don't know if we'll start it this week, but definitely the next week. Because you've got a lot going on this week.
Yeah, I'm moving, and we're then going out of town the next week. And like until from now until the beginning of March is, you know, booked solid. But
But we will be doing a longer form with feedback and more analysis for all of the season. And we will look to revisit you there. And we got still Walking Dead raging.
Yep.
Or lumbering. Moaning and shambling across the podcast landscape. So, all right. Thanks for going on the trip with us, guys. It's been fun. And we'll catch you next time.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody.
So that's it for our instant take, but starting next week, we'll be doing a longer, more in-depth weekly cast for House of Cards. Be sure to send us your thoughts and feedback to houseofcards@baldmove.com, and we just might read it on air. If you've enjoyed our show, please help us get our new House of Cards podcast launched in style by rating, reviewing, and subscribing on iTunes. You can also support us by using our Amazon affiliate link when you shop online. Just go to amazon.baldmove.com and we'll get a tiny cut of Amazon's profits from whatever you buy on that session. Best of all, it costs you nothing. Be sure to tell your friends, family, and coworkers about Bald Move. Also, check out our website for all our other television coverage for Game of Thrones, Mad Men, Walking Dead, Breaking Bad, and Downton Abbey, and all of our general pop culture casts like Personal Arrogance and The Picasso Show. Keep up with the latest on Twitter @BaldMove and on Facebook.com/BaldMove. See you next episode.